On this episode, Ghost Joe talks with Ken Ten, paranormal founder and host of the Get Haunted Network's Paranormal Addicts podcast, Kent Wilson. We talk time travel and a recent werewolf sighting. So get in your DeLoreans, because we're taking it to 88 miles an hour.
Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? I am Ghost Joe. Welcome to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast. Do I have an action-packed show for you guys today? So you're going to love this interview with Kent. Kent is a well-respected and highly regarded paranormal investigator with over 3 decades of experience. We will get to that in just a moment, but I just want to tell you guys what we have coming down the pipeline in the near future. So in the next coming weeks, I'll be interviewing some amazing people, one of which is a person with telekinesis abilities as well as many other spiritual abilities. He was awesome. I'll also be interviewing an author of his true paranormal events, Mr. Kevin Killen, as well as an astronomer who is also a member of MUFON and someone I had spoken with at a lecture a few months back, Mr. Mark D'Antonio. So you're going to love those interviews. That's what's coming up soon. And I got much, much more stuff coming up down the way too. So yeah. But first, we're going to talk about some recent news of the possibility of time travel. So let's get this going, all right? So the Pentagon's Advanced Aviation Threat Identification Program, or ATIP, has unleashed a trove of extraordinary revelations that are bound to ignite imaginations. Buried within 1,500 documents, once classified, lies a tantalizing peek into our potential future, a world where time travel, anti-gravity, and faster-than-light spacecraft could be within our grasp. That's freaking mind-blowing, isn't it? ATIP's reports explore groundbreaking possibilities, including manipulating space-time to achieve interstellar travel, using wormholes as cosmic shortcuts, and deploying nuclear-powered rockets to traverse icy objects surrounding the sun in search of Earth-like planets, which we just talked about in the last episode that we had found an Earth-like planet. So that's pretty freaking phenomenal. While these ideas sound like science fiction, experts suggest that they may not be as far-fetched as we think. The program even dove into the realm of alien encounters, researching how humans might communicate with extraterrestrial beings and examining the health impacts of UFO sightings. Our buddy there, Luis Elizondo, the program's former director, has confidently stated that UFO's existence is proven beyond a doubt, sparking both curiosity and controversy. So although ATIP has concluded, the Pentagon admitted last year to over 150 UFO reports by military pilots since 2004, fueling ongoing fascination with unexplained phenomena. These revelations compel us to wonder, are we alone? Are we on the brink of something spectacular? Could we soon unravel the mysteries of time and the cosmos? I guess we'll have to wait to find out, but we probably won't have to wait too long. It's definitely an amazing time for science right now, don't you think? All right, so now we're going to get into some cryptid corner, okay? So we're diving deep into the streets of Corrientes, Argentina, where sightings of a mysterious creature have reignited one of South America's most chilling legends, the Lobizon. Hope I'm saying that right. It's Argentina's very own werewolf. So grab your silver bullets and hold on to your garlic, because this story is about to get wild. Sorry, I have AI helping me sometimes. I know it's crazy. Anyway, picture this. It's April 2023 in the quiet neighborhood of Dr. Montaña Corrientes. People are going about their lives when suddenly there is a creature like no other, casually strolling down the street. Thin legs, shadowy figure, and when the footage emerged, oh, the internet went crazy. Skeptics waved it off as a dog. Others pointed and whispered, Lobizon. And I mean, come on, isn't it always Lobizon? So what's the deal with this wolfy wonder, right? The Lobizon is part of Argentina's rich folklore, a tale passed down for generations. Here's the twist, though. This isn't your ordinary werewolf story. The Lobizon is said to be the seventh son of any family, basically, cursed from birth to transform into a monstrous wolf at midnight on Fridays. Imagine that. Family dinner on Thursday, full-blown werewolf by Friday night. Like, come on, that's crazy sibling rivalry, right? But now let's talk about the sighting, okay? So this isn't the first time folks have claimed to spot the beast. In 2021, another creature caused a stir, with some saying it was hit by a truck or taken down by a hunter. Did we get proof? No. Just more mystery and more reasons to lock your doors at night. What's eerie, though, is how consistent these sightings are. Huge black dog, goat-like hooves, ears bigger than your ex's excuses. You can't make this stuff up. But hey, maybe the Lopi-san isn't here to haunt us. Maybe it's just misunderstood. A supernatural introvert wandering the streets looking for what? Acceptance? Snacks? A therapist? Who the hell knows, right? If you've ever seen a Lopi-san or any cryptid or an alien or a spirit or anything like that, or have had any kind of missing time or whatever, anything kind of strange, creepy, come on, I need you to call 845-600-0744. That's 845-600-0744. And let us know about it. We'll play it on the air. You could do it anonymously if you want. If you don't want to talk, you could just type it to me or whatever you want to do. Whatever makes you comfortable, okay? But trust and believe, there is definitely no judgment here. We just want to hear your experiences. And sometimes it's good to get that out and, you know, to have some acceptance for it, right? So, yeah, so check that out. Please give me a call. You could also email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. And please check out all of our socials. That's always in the show notes, as well as everybody else's socials, and the Get Haunted Network's socials as well are always there. And yeah, so check that out. But without further ado, here's our main event, my interview with Ken 10 Paranormal founder and the Paranormal Addicts podcast founder, Mr. Kent Wilson. So let's go. Our guest today is none other than Kent Wilson, a true pioneer in the world of paranormal investigation. With an impressive 33 years of experience since 1992, Kent is the founder and lead investigator of Ken 10 Paranormal, an organization dedicated to exploring the mysteries of the unknown. He is also the voice behind the captivating Paranormal Addicts podcast, where he shares his wealth of knowledge and experiences. Having conducted a staggering 1,035 investigations, I'm sure it's more by the time I've done this, Kent's insights and expertise make him a revered figure in the paranormal community. We're thrilled to have Ken here to share his journey and experiences. And welcome, Kent. How you doing?
I'm doing good tonight. Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, it was, I think I've probably listened or watched, I guess, as far as with the Get Haunted Network, your show probably more than anybody's on there. Yeah, I really enjoy it. I like your interviews and stuff like that. It's very, very cool.
I appreciate it. Yeah. I've got a lot of feedback on it over the past. And most people say they just like my Q&A style. And it's just a common sense podcast. You know, I just talk to the guests. Just talk to him. So, yeah.
You've been investigating since 1992. What first ignited your passion? Like, what was it that you really like said, you know, I want to do this. You know, I want to investigate this stuff.
Well, I was born with abilities. Now I look at it today, I call it a gift. Growing up, I just didn't necessarily consider it a gift, but you know, I was born with the ability to be able to see and speak with the spirits, and being from not only the Bible Belt, but the heart of the Bible Belt, I didn't really get a lot of encouragement to pursue that. But for some reason, when I was about 14, so this would have been 1987, 1988, me and my best friend, who's no longer with us, Tracy, we decided that we was going to go full into the paranormal field. We had no idea what we was doing, but we were going to figure it out on our own. So we went to the library. We went to the McCracken County Library and across our high school library, and you know, checked out everything we could on paranormal, ghost investigating, Bigfoot, aliens, you know, everything. We dived into it. The first book that I actually ever read that you know, I guess where I developed my passion was actually a book by the Warrens. And so I read that. And then, like, I tell people all the time, like, at 14, me and all of our friends were spending Halloween and stuff at your haunted attractions, you know, seeing your scary movies, you know, going to the local haunted house or whatever. Me and Trace were actually spending Halloween at actual haunted places. So so that's kind of how I got started. And then, like I said, once I turned 18, which was 92, I went to college on a baseball scholarship, moved to Georgia. And there I was actually able to connect with some people to help guide me a little bit more. So that's what, at that point, that's when I figured out that my gifts were a gift from God, and he wanted me to use it to help people figure out the paranormal. So that's what led my fire.
Nice. And you founded Kenton Paranormal. When did you start that? And you know, what would you say sets you guys apart from other paranormal groups?
Well, Kenton Paranormal was kind of an interesting thing because Kenton Paranormal, we've been together now for 5 years. I founded it in 2020. You know, I lost 3 years of investigating and stuff because of my brain and spine surgery. So 2020, the bug got back into me that maybe I would be able to do this again. You know, I mean, I had to learn how to walk again and everything. So I didn't really know if I'd ever be able to get back to what I love. So the bug bit me. And you know, I'm lucky that even though my wife doesn't investigate with me, she fully supports it. And she's big into the paranormal. Like she helps me review evidence and all that stuff. So she's just someone to go on the actual investigation. But one of our friends had an interest in the paranormal, and I kept saying, well, maybe I should join it. Maybe I should start a team again. And finally she's like, just start a team. So that's how Kenton Paranormal was founded. And so Kenton stands for Kentucky, Tennessee, Kenton. And that doesn't mean that we only investigate in Kentucky, Tennessee. We'll go wherever. But that's where our members are from, that area, Western Kentucky, Northwest Tennessee. So what sets us apart, it's kind of like our slogan that we like to use, is we use the old school techniques like the Ouija board, the pendulum, you know, all that. We use all that, but we also use all the fancy stuff. Like I got the SLS, I got everything. So what we kind of like to tell people, our little slogan is old school techniques with new school technology. And that's right. But the thing that, one of the main things that separates us apart is we still do residential investigations. You know, so if somebody calls and says, can you help us? That's our priority. That's actually, to us, that's actually what we're here. Yeah. So
that's cool, because a lot of people, like, I mean, I know the way you phrased it right there, a lot of people don't, I guess they're kind of nervous to do residential, you know, things because of, you know, lawsuits and liability and stuff like that. But I think that's awesome. Do you now, when you do the residential stuff, if somebody calls you up and says, you know, I need help, do you find a way, do you just like go in there to be like, oh yeah, you know, you definitely have something here? Or do you go in there to rid the house of, you know, the issue?
Well, we have to figure out what we're actually dealing with first. I mean, you know, I'm not only an experienced investigator, I'm an educated investigator. I actually have 2 Bible degrees. I have a parapsychology degree. I'm a trained demonologist. So I'm trained, if we figure out we need to cleanse the house, I'm trained to do that. You know, but if somebody calls us and asks us to do a residential investigation, we actually have a process that we do. We actually base this process kind of on TAS, the one that TAPS used when they did residentials. So when somebody calls us, the first thing that happens is we'll do a phone interview, and I personally do the phone interview. And I actually have a sheet that it's an actual interview. I ask questions, and and you know, some of the questions are pretty invasive. You know, I'll ask like, what religion you are, if you know anything about the history of the house, if any of your family members, you know, mess with witchcraft or Ouija boards, you know, so, you know, I get kind of personal on it. So after that, if I decide that there could be something and we can help them, then we do an in-person interview. And the in-person interview is me with my two team leads, and then one other person goes with us. And the in-person interview, I asked the exact same questions I asked on the phone interview, but we asked them to everybody, you know, everybody in that house is asking the questions that, and, you know, we're comparing the answers, we're videoing it, we're voice recording it, you know, all at the same time. And then, and like I said, four of us go, that's because me and Jill, I ask the questions and she takes notes. And then the other two do a meaning investigation. They go through and do baseline readings with the EMF reader, with the SLS, with the thermal camera, you'll get baselines. And then after that, if we feel there could be something and they need our help, then we'll set up the actual investigation. And then the actual investigation usually takes anywhere from 6 hours to 2 or 3 days, just depending on the level of activity, how big the location is, you know, whatever. And then after we compare all the evidence, then if we think that we need to cleanse the house or whatever, that's what we do. You know, we want a residential is different than, you know, a public investigation or a historical, whatever term you want to use, because, you know, when we do a residential, we don't worry about Facebook lives. We don't worry about any of that. We're there to help the client. We don't even give the location of where we're at. So we definitely cleanse the house and then we follow up, you know, 2 weeks later, and then a month later, you know, we follow up for 6 months every week. And then after that, you know, they come to us if they have any more activity. You know, the thing that's interesting, I guess it's kind of a misconception from TV shows and stuff. You know, everybody thinks every time you go into a house, you know, it's going to be haunted or whatever. I don't even use the haunted term. For me, I use the term active. Because if you use haunted, everybody automatically thinks you're dealing with a malicious spirit or a demonic spirit or whatever. So to me, your location is active or not active. So, you know, but even if it's active, what people have to realize is spirits, they can cross over whenever they want to. We don't cross them over. Spirits can cross over whenever they want to. So if they're still here, there's something, they're here for a reason or something's keeping them here. But yeah. So even if it is a spirit that we have to help cross over, it's not us crossing them over. We might show them the light. We might help them find the path, but it's them that's actually crossing them over.
With all of the investigations that you've done, whether it was residential or, you know, historic, however you want to say it, is there any one that really stands out to you that's like a very memorable investigation that you've done?
So, being from Kentucky, everybody always assumes that I'm going to say Waverly Hills. And I have a love-hate relationship with Waverly Hills. I don't really know if it's a hate relationship. But so I've investigated Waverly several times, obviously, you know, being from Kentucky. And the first couple of times I investigated, it was like crazy active. I mean, it was so active the first time, I didn't even have to ask questions. The spirits were just walking down the hallway. And now I think because it's almost been turned into a tourist attraction, I don't think the spirits like that. So they're not. Right. So you know, I guess recently my most memorable investigation is a place that you can't. They've closed down the public investigations again. So the backstory is the activity there is so violent. They closed it down for 3 years, and then they opened it back up. Well, when they opened it back up, KNTN Paranormal was the second team to go there. So we go there, and of course, you know, we do. The host guy does the walkthrough and whatever. So it's called, the name of the location is the Anderson Hotel. And I use the word hotel loosely nicely, because we're not talking about like a Hilton or a Ramada or even a Motel 6. It's a transit hotel. You know what I'm saying? You know, that's all it is. It's a transit hotel. So that's the first thing we have to realize. The second thing we came to realize very quickly at the location, and it's important to the story, is they want it. The people that own the place want it to be violently haunted. And I say that for a couple reasons. One reason is it's important to know that there's five verified deaths there, whether they be for suicide, murder, whatever. There's five verified. And when I say verified, I'm talking about I verified it with a coroner report, I verified it with a police report, and I verified it with the newspaper. You know, when I verify, I verify. I don't take my reputation lightly. I carry insurance, and I have a legal reputation on hand. So I take my reputation very seriously. So when I say verified, I mean verified. So with that in mind, you do the walkthrough, and there's three of the bloodstained mattresses still at the hotel where the people committed suicide. They still have the bloodstained mattresses. There's a bloodstained bathtub with one of the other people committed suicide. And then the fourth room, which is one that ends up having, we'll get to a little bit later in the story because it's crazy active. It's called the Blue Room. The guy lived there. And you know, people have to realize that, you know, demonic hauntings, they are out there, but there are very few of them. You're talking about less than 1% of our activity is demonic, but there are malicious hauntings out there. And a malicious hunting is just a spirit, this, you know, evil or mean or whatever. And, you know, I tell people all the time, if somebody was a dickhead when they were alive, they're going to be a dickhead when they're dead. So that's where the malicious spirit is. So that's
the same thing. I use asshole, but I'm actually, and I just told somebody that today, not to cut you off. I swear to you, I just said that to somebody today. I said, yeah, you know, I said, listen, I said, I don't want it to sound too crude. I said, but if you were an asshole in life, you're going to be an asshole in death. And that's just how it is, you know?
Exactly.
And, you know, that's funny. That's funny.
And that's exactly what this guy was. He was a dickhead, an asshole, whatever you want to call it. Like I said, he lived there and he drank himself to the point that he hung himself in the closet. Well, all of his liquor bottles are still there. And the people that own it think it's funny if you're an investigator, if you bring a liquor bottle to add to his collection. We didn't do that. We don't provoke spirits. So we didn't do that.
Right.
But besides being an alcoholic and a dickhead, he also ran prostitutes in and out of the hotel. So like I'm saying, he was just an asshole. So we get there. And of course, we've already figured out that this is going to be an interesting investigation, to put it nicely. So we sort out in the bathtub, with the room with the bathtub. The backstory of the room in the bathtub is a 33-year-old mother checked into the hotel to commit suicide. Her husband and her kid had just got killed in an accident, and that was her response. And like I said, her bloodstain's still in the bathtub. So we set up, you know, we have a video camera set up. We have voice recorder. I have my Paratek, the M5 going. So I asked if I can get in the bathtub because that's my investigation stuff. I talk to the spirits just like I'm talking to you, and I respect them. So I asked, and the answer we got was yes and no. I'm like, well, I can't do both. So I get in the bathtub, and you know, we're going back and forth, having a decent EVP session, and it tells me to get out. Well, my thing is, I don't get out the first time a spirit tells me to, because I'm there to help. I'm there to help them, and I'm there to find answers. And I also travel 6 hours to be in this location, so you know. Right. So I keep going. And I'm like, so eventually we get to the third time, and so like I said, the third time is when I leave that room. So the Anderson Hotel people, the tagline is their spirits, the ghost bite. So, and you know, that takes a lot of energy. I've been pushed, I've been scratched, I've had things thrown at me, but you know, biting. So anyway, I didn't believe that until So I'm trying to get out of the bathtub, and this is one of the old-fashioned bathtubs, you know, with the chlor feed and stuff. So I'm trying to pull myself out of the thing, and my team's helping. And as I get out, I feel what feels like a really deep Indian burn on my leg. And so when we get back to the base camp. We look at it, and I have what looks like a double bite on my leg. And I actually tattooed it because I wanted to make sure I always had it. So that's how the investigation started. And it picked up from there. So then I guess the most famous room is the room that they call the suicide room. So the backstory of the suicide room is this 19-year-old kid, that 19-year-old kid, I don't care, this 19-year-old kid. She came all the way down from Michigan to this little shithole in Kentucky. Nobody really knows her whole backstory. Only thing you can do is piece together from, you know, her talk to us and, you know, what we know. But what it appears is she had her heart broke and she was coming down to Kentucky to start over again. So you get to her room and for some reason with crayon. And I don't know why crayon, but it just makes it even more creepy. With crayon, she writes Bible verses and draws little pictures on paper and hangs them all over her room. And they're all still there. So they should have like a mountain range with a Bible verse on it, or a river with a Bible verse on it. And they're all just hanging on the wall. But she ended up committing suicide on that mattress at 19. And she went out on the mattress, and the mattress is still there. And she was not a malicious or an evil spirit. She did not like to talk to the guys, though. So that's the reason I kind of figured out that, you know, she had a heart broke. So she talked to the girls. Me and Dennis, we went on to the blue room, you know, that I mentioned earlier. And before we could even get to the blue room, something pushed Dennis down to the ground. And Dennis is a big guy. Dennis is about 6'1" and about 240. So something just pushed him to the ground. So as we're getting ready to go in the blue room, we were attracted to the room next to it. But what's interesting about the room next to it, for the 3 years where the Anderson Hotel was closed down, the people decided it'd be a good idea to turn it into a haunted attraction, you know, to make money out of it. Because, you know, that's exactly what you do to a haunted place. So they decided it'd be cool if they painted a voodoo symbol on the wall. Well, so they, without researching or anything, they just picked one that looked cool. Well, the voodoo symbol that they picked was the one that opened the gates to hell. So that falls in the category, if you don't know what you're doing, don't do it, because you can mess things up. Yeah. So anyway, we noticed that the guy that investigated this over the hotel had he was trying to undo the voodoo. So he had like sage and stuff, you know, burning, you know, to try. So before we go into the living room, I decided for some reason it'd be a good idea for me to go in the closet where the guy actually committed suicide. So I stepped in the closet. And as soon as I stepped in the closet, all my energy was drained, and I hit the ground. Dennis had to actually pull me out of the closet. So that was really the only exciting thing to have to ask. But then we spent all 45 minutes there, and I don't know what it was about that room and about the conversation with the guy. We found out his name was John, by the way. We don't know. But for some reason, I knew that John didn't like females. I mean, renting prostitutes is one thing, so anyway, we was getting ready to switch. I decided to radio back to the females, and I'm like, I know we're getting ready to switch, and I know you guys are coming up here. I was like, I'm not telling you not to, but I was like, as a lead investigator, you know, I feel like I need to warn you that John does not like females. I was like, I don't know what's going to happen. I just want you guys to be on the lookout. So we switch, and my niece is on my team, And at that time, she was 19. So anyway, she decided to use the prostitute angle to get John talking. So she was like, this is still one of the best EVPs I ever got. She decided to use the prostitute thing. So when she's walking up to the radio, she's like, I'm 19 and cute. Can I get a job? And the response we got was $50 and free room. And I mean, it was completely clear, just like that. Wow. $50, free room. So then the girls kept going.
Wow.
And like I said, they were provoking because I don't allow that on my team. When they kept going, where the John was rubbing up with Jill, like, you know, rubbing up on her. And, you know, she kept saying, you know, don't do it. Well, then he ended up grabbing Tiffany by her female area. Like, grabbing her. So that's wow. So at that point, I ended the investigation. Even though we traveled 6 hours, team safety comes first.
Right.
And like I said, investigations are now closed to the location. They no longer allow them again anymore. So, which is probably the best.
Wow. Yeah. No, definitely, especially with the spirit like that. You know, for sure.
It was really insane. I never experienced ever there was the being bit and a team member being sexually assaulted by ghosts. Like I said, I've been scratched, pushed, things thrown at me, you know. But yeah, I never to that level. You know, that was truly a malicious spirit. It was not a demonic spirit, but it was a malicious spirit.
Yeah, I was kind of not that I hope for myself to have any kind of, but I was actually kind of hoping that I was going to get pushed or something, you know, when I went to the Mid-Orange Correctional Facility. I'm like, well, I'm a correction officer, you know, like who better to push than me, you know, with these guys. But there was some cool things that we encountered over there too. A specific EVP that I'm going to play on the show once Rob gives that to me. I can't wait to play that because it was a very, very clear EVP.
So you know, whenever I go to a prison, and I've been to a few, obviously in 33 years. So, where I usually get the most activity, you surprise me at first, but now it makes sense to me. But you know, so let's take Brushy Penitentiary. You know, probably one of the most famous hiding prisons, you know. So I've been there three times. So, you know, everybody always assumes like death row or something like that would be the most active place. To me, I've always got more activity at like the dining hall, the mess hall, whatever you want to call it. And used to, I was like, that doesn't make any sense. But the more I think about it and the more I review, you know, it actually does make a lot of sense because that's actually where they have the most actual interaction between each other. So.
Right. I mean, well, that's where, you know, if they're in housing areas or in cell blocks, they're either by themselves most of the time or they're with people that they're okay with, you know? But in the mess hall, there's going to be rival gangs in there. There's going to be people that don't like each other that have had fights in the past. You know, everybody's congregated in the same area when they're in the mess hall, when they're in the yard, when they're in the religious services area. And that's ultimately where, you know, a lot of the, you know, riots and, you know, cuttings and stuff like that happen is in those places, you know, cause that's where, you know, and I've been on, you know, I've been working in the area where like, yo, that guy just said, oh, you know, we're going to go to the yard. We're going to see so-and-so in the yard. You know, and then because they're planning something, you know, so that's, you know, I mean, that makes a lot more sense that's where most of the activity would be, you know. Let's get into the podcast, man. So Paranormal Addicts, you know, you started that part of the Get Haunted Network now, as am I with the Warp Reality Paranormal Podcast. Great, great, awesome people. Everybody that's involved. Very, very cool, you know. I love it, you know, and honestly, like I've been getting more views on their website than I've ever done with, you know, with Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all that stuff. So they're really helping me out a lot by doing what they're doing. So when did you start Paranormal Addicts, and, you know, what made you get into the podcast, you know, aspect of it?
So this is my second season with Paranormal Addicts podcast. So I just, you know, I was talking to some people, and I mean, you know, it's like we were talking back when you asked me to be on the show. You know, I'm a very humble person. You know, I don't consider myself anything more than a researcher. But, you know, they were like, with all your knowledge and experience, you know, you need to share that. So that's kind of how Paranormal Addicts started. And my first three episodes actually weren't even on Get Haunted. They were just, you know, they were just on YouTube. And I saw a thing. Sarah posted a thing, you know, looking for a podcast. So I sent a thing, you know, to Sarah. And she's like, you know, they did a little interview. And after that, like you said, that's when my, you know, I went from like 100 and something views and episode to that. This season, I'm averaging like 735 on a Friday. You know, that's hard to do on a Friday. You know, for whatever reason, Sarah makes sure to let me know that, you know, Paranormal Addicts, it's the number one show on Get Haunted on Fridays. You know, so, you know, and, you know, last year was kind of a test, because the first three or four episodes, I had guest co-hosts. So they were just friends of mine. They would come in, help me out. And then I had a co-host almost all of last season that I was asked to give a chance to, and it didn't work out. Like, I was doing everything. I had Rob and Marie from Elite Paranormal. They were my guests. They were my guests. And they're like, your co-host is bringing your show down. Because he didn't ask questions, and he would leave like during the show. So this year, so far, I'm not going to say I'm never going to have a co-host again. But so far this year, it's just been me and my guest. So that seemed to go good so far.
That's cool. I mean, without obviously saying any names, was there ever anybody that you did an interview with and you're like, you know what? I can't air this. This isn't going to work.
Yeah, I've had a couple that, and of course, that's the bad thing about being live. You know, I don't really get it figured out until I'm already on the air. So yeah, I've had a couple that, you know, I've had it like, luckily that's when I had my guest co-host. So I was able to make the show more about me and the co-host, you know. So, yeah, I've had a couple like that. And then I've had some that I was actually really surprised how well it went. Like, take my show Friday, for example. I was really dreading it because I, you know, there really wasn't a whole lot I could find about that guest. And then, you know, the book, his latest book, really wasn't I didn't think it was a subject that was going to go over well with the viewers, but it actually ended up being a good interview. And, you know, like I said, I had 735 views. And that surprised me, you know, because I didn't think anybody would want to talk about vampires dead or alive. But, you know, apparently I was wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, too, because, you know, I sit there and I'm like writing the questions and stuff. And I'm like, you know, you have to try and word the questions the right way, because you don't want it to be like, all right, well, I don't want these people to just say yes or no, and then that's the end of the question. You know, like, you have to ask these like leading questions to get into these conversations. You know, I've had interviews where his name escapes me because it's been like 2 years since I talked to him, but I think we must have talked for like 2.5 hours, me and this one guest. It was so much. I don't even think I ever even aired it, because it was just so much to try and edit. But it was so good. He was such a good... I'm going to have to revisit that guy one day and put that out there, because he was a super great guest. But it was just a lot.
That's the way it is with me. I mean, you know, technically, Paranormal Addicts is supposed to be 1 hour, but I'm telling you, if you go back and look at my archive, especially this season, you know, most of my shows have went 2 hours or longer, you know, because if it's going good, you know, I'm not going to end it just because, you know, right. That's like last year, Rob and Sarah was on the show, and it's actually still my most viewed episode ever. We had, it was like over 2,000 views, and wow. So it was going good, and I was like, we're at an hour, and Rob's like, just keep going. He's like, this old podcast program, he's going to cut you off.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I'm excited about my episode Friday though, because I got Josh Purvis from the Searchers, so that should be a good one.
Awesome. What do you feel is the most challenging of doing a paranormal podcast?
Most challenging to do a podcast is just to make sure, from my standpoint, I want to make sure that the show is relevant. You know, obviously I want to entertain because that's how I get viewers, but I want to make sure that the material is relevant and, you know, we educate people, you know. To me, that's what my platform is all about. I want to bring on guests to help educate everybody. I'm not going to bring you on a pair of celebrity just to talk about everything's a demon or, you know, that's not what my show's about. I mean, I've had some pair of celebrities on there. I got some pair of celebrities that are my friends. But if you're going to be on my show and you're going to be my friend, first of all, you're going to be a legitimate investigator. I'm not just going to bring on somebody. I'm not going to just ring on like Jason Hayes because he's Jason. Jason's a good investigator, so no offense to him. That's the reason I used his name. You know, there's other people's name I could have used that I don't consider. But, you know, so here's an example. So Aaron G. Thompson, you know, Aaron G. Thompson, 28 Days Haunted. You know, that's what everybody knows him for. So Aaron G. Thompson was. He was going to be, well, he was a speaker at my Paracon last year. So when he came to be, so since he was going to be a speaker at my Paracon, I was like, you need to be a guest on the podcast so I can get to know you. So so it came time for him to be on my show, and I had not watched 28 Days Haunted because I'm not a paranormal TV person, you know, because most of them were not real, but Aaron G. Thompson is going to be on my show. So I binge watched all of 28 Days Haunted, unfortunately, because I feel like I've lost brain cells out of it. But anyway, but then once I got Aaron G. on my show and we got to talking, that is a disservice to him for him to be labeled just for 28 Days Haunted, because he's actually been investigating for 25 years too. He's actually a really legit, really cool investigator. So that's why he was on my show. Not because he was on TV. I don't care about that. So that's the hardest thing to me, is to make sure I stay relevant and I don't just, you know, make sure I continue to do it for the right reasons and don't worry about saying demon, demon, demon so I get 200 more likes, you know.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear that. For me too, like I always tell, you know, especially like if I'm going to have a psychic medium or a demonologist or whatever on my show, I've had a bunch. I always have like these two rules. I'm like, listen, I'd love to have you on the show. I said, but I have two rules. No politics and don't go crazy with religious stuff. You know, I said, this is an entertainment podcast. First and foremost, you know, I said, I understand if it's a demonology or a psychic medium stuff, you're going to have to talk about some kind of religion in there at, you know, to some degree, but, you know, just keep it simple, you know, don't go over preachy on me. You know what I mean? And, I've always had good responses with that. You know, one person after I had actually said that, they're like, all right, yeah, no, I'm not going to be on your show then. Like, oh, okay.
All right. Yeah, and those are two good rules. I mean, I've never really made that a rule. I guess I've always considered it kind of under, you know, kind of a I'd written rule, but it's a good rule to have. I definitely ain't going to get any politics on here. There's actually people that I respect in the field and stuff. I've actually stopped following my Facebook because the only thing they want to talk about is politics. And I don't care which side you're on, that's your view. I don't want to read 80 hours of your political views. And same with religion. To me, religion is part of my investigating, part of how I investigate. But for other people, they look at it, they may be more anti. And where are you going to draw a line? If you let somebody talk about Christianity, you got to let them talk about the Church of Satan. Then you got to so it's good just to have only as necessary, because it's kind of hard to talk about, like you said, demonology without some religion,
So now, do you have any personal theories or beliefs about, why certain locations are hotspots for paranormal activity? Do you have any kind of, wisdom regarding that? Like, why are certain places so, I guess, for lack of, haunted or?
Well, like I said earlier, spirits choose to choose not to cross over or whatever term you want to use. So they, they choose where they are. They can be like a subconscious with them, just like it be. One place I find I get a lot of activity that surprises some people is I always get a lot of activity at like a church. And my theory to that is because that's a place where they felt safe when they were alive, so that's where they go as a spirit. So usually a spirit chooses a place that they're drawn to. Or where they had a lot of life at, like we were talking about, like prisons earlier, so a lot of those people, unfortunately, in prisons have been there for decades. So, that's where their life is. So obviously that's where their memories are going to be drawn to, or like a family house. One place that I tell people, sometimes I think I'm the odd one out on this theory, but it's still my theory. To me, a cemetery is not really an active place to investigate. There's no reason for spirits to be there. They didn't live there. They didn't die there. So why would they still be there? With that being said, I have seen some cemeteries with activities, but most of the time you're going to get activities like a family house, a school, a church, a prison, somewhere where everyday life was. And then you have to figure out why they're still there. Whether it's unfinished business or I got a good friend that's the chief deputy sheriff down here. And they actually asked us to come investigate this road. This road supposedly had two spirits. And he did have two spirits. So, but the one spirit was still there. He chose to still be there, and he actually told us that because he knew he's going to hell, and he didn't want to go to hell, so he chose to stay on that road. So they died in a car wreck, and the girlfriend and the boyfriend were still there. The girlfriend was the first spirit that we made contact with, and she told us she was looking for the boyfriend. She wanted to cross over with him. That's what she told us, and. So then we found the boyfriend, and he's like, I appreciate her staying to cross over with me, but I'm not crossing over. So tell her to go ahead and cross over.
So now when you communicate with these spirits and stuff, you use the Ouija board as a tool, one of your methods of communicating?
I don't use a Ouija board myself. That's not a tool that I use. Now, it's not a tool that I'm against. To me, a Ouija board, it's just a tool like any other tool, as long as it's used properly and you're properly trained. Now, I have good friends that they use Ouija boards, and I actually have a friend making me a custom-made Ouija board from England the letters are going to be made from ashes from a haunted location over there, and we're actually selling chances on it to help pay for the Paracon this year. So I'm not anti. It's just a tool I use. I do use the pendulum, and so I use that to communicate with. And sometimes the spirits just come to me, you know, like I guess telepathically, for lack of better terms, and just communicates to me that way.
So what do you have? I know you had mentioned it a little bit earlier, but what do you have coming up in the near future? With anything, with your group or with the podcast, what do you have coming up?
Well, the podcast is every Friday night, live at 7 Central, 6 Eastern on Get Haunted or YouTube channel. I push Get Haunted, though. So on Get Haunted, every Friday, like I said, this week, I'm excited because we got Josh Paris. And then besides that, I'm actually working on my first book. I've actually read the first couple of chapters, and the working title is "Don't Use Generic Batteries," and it's probably not a demon. Memoirs of a ghost, a paranormal researcher. So that's in the works, and again, that's another one of those things I never really thought about doing, but I've been asked to so many times, I finally just gave in. So we have. My team, we have several investigations coming up. We're investigating a bed and breakfast is known as the Riverview Mansion in Golconda, Illinois. It was built in 1910. It's always been known to be haunted. And then we're investigating a place in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, called the Glen House. It was built in 1820. And it's all still like original stuff. They got, you know, furniture from the time and everything. Outlaw Paranormal actually investigated there once. And then of course I got in September, I got my Paracon this year. We've renamed it a little bit because there's so much negativity in the paranormal field. We dropped the Paracon, and this year we're calling it a Paranormal Expo. So it's West Kentucky Paranormal Expo, and we have a pretty loaded lineup. We got Outlaw Paranormal coming in. We have eight speakers, and right now we have 18 vendors. But last year we ended up with 40 vendors. So we'll get more as we go along, And it's also a charity event. Part of the proceeds go to a charity of my choice every year. Last year we donated to a spousal abuse center. This year I decided the charity is going to be a Kiori malformation, Conquer Kiori Foundation, because a Kiori is the condition I have. That's why I've had the brain surgery. That's why I have my seizures. That's why I have my blackouts. That's why I'm disabled. So I was like, why not give to the charity that means so much to me?
No, that sounds great, man. You know, and if anybody needed to, I mean, I'm going to have all your show notes, all of your links and stuff in the show notes and everything. But if somebody wanted to get in touch with you for anything, you know, how could they do so?
Yeah, so like, obviously I stay busy. If anybody wants to contact me or us or whatever, especially if it's for an investigation, like I said, residential investigations is our favorite thing. So if you think you have activity in your house or business, reach out to me. There's no charge ever. If you ever contact a team and they tell you there's going to be a charge for it, look somewhere else because they're probably not a legit team, and there's plenty of other legit teams that will come and do it for free. So if your business or home that you want us to come look at, go on Facebook and find us, Kentan Paranormal. Email us at KentanParanormal@gmail.com. If you want to call me, if you go on Facebook, the number on our page is actually my cell phone, so you can call me. Like I said, the podcast, we have a Facebook page, Paranormal Addicts Podcast. Make sure you put that podcast in there. And then we have a YouTube page too, which is Paranormal Addicts Podcast too. And, yep. And, uh, And the Expo has a page too, West Kentucky Paranormal Expo. Anybody in the area, I'm telling you, you don't want to miss it. Tickets are only $10, and it's a 10-hour event. So you get a wristband. You can come and go as you want. So, yep. Food. We got food trucks there, so you don't have so you can eat. We have 40 vendors, 8 speakers, meet and greets. Yep. It's a good event.
Awesome. Good luck on everything. Good luck on writing your book too. I think that's awesome. That's really cool. Especially since you've been doing it for so long, I'm sure you got definitely plenty of stories to fill a book. That's for sure. Probably more than one book.
The basis is going to be a how to be a paranormal investigator book. And I know there's lots of those, but most of them are boring and stupid. We even got the idiot guide to paranormal investigator. So mine actually has my personality in it.
Right.
So it's actually going to be fun. And so that's like the first 6 chapters of the book is like how to be an investigator. And then I go into like locations I've been to and like, so it's going to be like you're on the investigation with it. So for example, at Ravenly, it's going to be like, this is the EMF reading I got. This is the shadow figure I captured. And you get to make the decision on your own whether it's actually active or not.
That's so cool. And good luck with that. And I'll definitely be looking out for that book for sure. Thanks so much again for being on the show. I really appreciate it. Good luck with everything that you're doing. The book and the event and everything. And this was really fun, man. I'm glad we got to do this. And have a great night. And I'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks again, man. I appreciate it. Thanks again to Mr. Kent Wilson for being on my show. It was awesome having you. I really appreciate you coming on. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And thank you to the Get Haunted Paranormal Network as well for helping me out with everything that you helped me out with. You've brought new life to my show and to me and have given me a lot of reason to continue doing what I'm doing. So thank you, everybody. And have a great night. And I'll talk to you guys next week. Later. Thank you for listening to the Warp Reality Paranormal Podcast. And thank you to all of my guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest in the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744. Or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, please check out our show notes for all social media links of this show and some of our friends. The Warp Reality Paranormal Podcast, uncovering the unseen.